We've been hearing German impressions of America from journalist Stefan Wagner today on Travel with Rick Steves. So let's continue our conversation with Stefan from a different angle. Let's find out what Stefan's been hearing from Americans as they try to figure out how things work in Germany. Now, you're German, and you've been dealing with Americans probably for decades in Munich. What's an annoying kind of stereotype that Americans might have about your culture?
I wouldn't say it's annoying. I think it's baffling to a lot of Americans to deal with the German bluntness and directness. I think it's one of the points that a lot of people get upset, including my family. I'm married to an American, and the in-laws say the same thing. Why are you so blunt? Why are you so direct? And it's the way we're supposedly raised to really say what we think.
No, I've noticed that when I'm in Germany, too. It does take me by surprise a little bit. And why do you think Germans prize that kind of directness? Why be blunt?
If you ask an American how he or she is feeling, the answer is, yeah, I'm fine, all good. But if you ask a German, the answer would really be a very detailed response on medical conditions and the current psychological state of mind of the person you're asking this. I think we're just raised to be honest and not hold back. And it's one of the big things that you probably hear all the time. Americans are superficial, which they aren't, but it's...
I don't know about that, we're not, because we have a kind of a smiley face culture. And I had a German friend that flew over here once, and he was astounded at how everything was just smiley face. They even had smiley face art on the shopping paper bags at the grocery store. And it was just like, smile and be a winner. The bank would actually encourage the tellers to always say, have a happy day. You know, and I guess from a German point of view, that doesn't come across as sincere.
Exactly. But the longer you're here, I think the more you enjoy it. That people say you're not sitting in row 3D on the plane, you're sitting in row 3 delightful. And I experienced that on my flight in yesterday, and it just leaves you with a smile. And what's wrong about smiling?
And that's one thing we Americans can capitalize on, take advantage of in our travels. We're more comfortable being informal. It's not rude or particularly polite. It's just how we are. And a German society would be more formal. You would be Mr. Wagner for a little while before you'd be Stefan.
With you for a very short time. But yes, you'd be taken aback if somebody addressed you with on a first name basis. Mm-hmm. I think one other thing is that Americans might be struck about Germans is I would call this nation the world's wealthiest whiners. We just love to complain. Everything's horrible. Things are gloomy and doomy, but really they aren't. It's one of the most developed, wealthiest nations with a great welfare state and everything. There's no reason to whine.
But Germans are inclined to complain about things.
Exactly.
When they're together. That's interesting. Now, Stefan, anybody who travels to Europe knows that different countries have a different take on modesty and nudity and so on. And when you go to Germany, you see people sunbathing, naked in the parks. You see perfect strangers, men and women, naked together in the spas. On my tours, we would go to Baden-Baden, and my mission was to take Americans into the spa in Baden-Baden, where Germans just, they're not hung up on nudity at all. We've got school teachers in parts of Florida that are losing their job if they show a photograph of Michelangelo's David. Public TV stations actually need to flag my shows to see how many marble breasts and how many canvas penises we're showing on our TV show, because in some markets in the United States, they don't want to show that until after bedtime. How do Germans deal with nudity, and how do Germans look at Americans that have this prudish approach to that?
You mentioned nudity and modesty. I think it's two totally different things. You can be a very modest person who's nude, and you can be a very nude person who's modest or not. But I would say that's the way we were created, and there's no reason to hide it. There has been a massive culture with nudity in Scandinavian and also Central European countries. It's not a big deal. It's just the way things are. You wouldn't cover your face just because you think it's not pretty.
So lunchtime, you got a break in Munich. It's a sunny day. Get on your bicycle. Go to the Englischer Garden.
I work 3 minutes away from it. I go to the garden, but for a beer instead of a nude swim. Skinny dip.
You'll see a lot of nude people in the summer in Munich.
You can do it, but the interesting thing is it's only American tourists that go there and look at them. Most people just ride their bikes by and say, okay.
That's the thing.
They're going for a swim. They're sitting in the sun. They don't focus on the...
And Americans will go all across town to ride their bikes through that just to go, whoa, did you see what I saw? This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Stefan Wagner. And Stefan is a journalist in Germany. And he's in our studio today sharing the German perspective on the United States of America. You know, Americans have a view of Germany that I think was shaped by what was the American sector after World War II. Can you tell us about how Germany was divided after World War II? Of course, Germany was just bombed to smithereens, and then the Allied forces got to divide up the country. How was that division made, and how does that division survive to this day?
Well, it's a big division, and I think the most important thing to know is that there were two Germanys. One was the former German Democratic Republic, and the other one was the American sector, the French sector, and the British sector back until 1990. I come from the southern part of Germany, which was the American sector.
Right.
And I can tell you there's been nothing but fantastic memories of the occupation force America. Everybody loved them. It was great to have you, and especially with the years developing in the Soviet sector and the oppression in the Soviet sector, the differences became even more apparent.
Maybe the joy of being in the American sector was heightened by the fact that they weren't in the Soviet sector.
Exactly. They were not allowed to leave their own country. I mean, as you know,
right,
in 1961, the Berlin Wall was set up, or the wall also separating East Germany and Western Germany. It's been a traumatic experience to have our country separated by 28. Just imagine a line going through the U.S. Separating the South from the North or the East from the West, and it's the experience that we've gone through.
What lasting feelings are there, or psychological differences? Has that totally dissolved, or today can you psychoanalyze what was Eastern Germany, which is now for 35 years been part of a united Germany?
It's a big debate as we speak, and I'm glad you're touching on this topic, because there is no reunification of the minds yet. It's been 33 years that it's been one country, but there's still a lot of different perceptions on what life in Germany should be like. Obviously, the German government poured trillions and trillions of euros into the eastern part. So the infrastructure standards are way up there, but still a lot of people leave that part of the country and move to the big industrialized zones with more future-proof jobs in Western Germany. The idea is really that there's a lot of dissatisfaction on how things have been developing. There's a lot of feelings of being left behind, being left outside the mainstream. And we do have a big resurgence of right-wing extremism in the eastern part of Germany. They're the second strongest party there.
It's interesting. So with the communist heritage, they're the society that is more likely to embrace right-wing ideologies at this point.
And left-wing. It's just a more extremist outlook on
extremist,
life.
Extremist, I see. Also, you have, so we talked about the East and West, but there's a North and South divide also, which fascinating to me, because the Roman Empire went as far as the Rhine River. Everything beyond that was barbarian, and everything south of that was part of the Roman Empire. And then 500 years ago, there's horrible wars. A third of Germany was killed in the religious wars, and the dividing line was the same line, actually. You got Roman Catholic Germany, and you got Protestant Germany. What is the thought today about if you're a northern German looking at a Bavarian, or if you're a Bavarian looking up at a Prussian?
Very good question. I think the main difference really is the Catholic Protestant thing. Obviously, as a Catholic living in the southern part of Germany, we're very happy to have a lot more vacation days. It's public holidays, so we have like 3 to 4 days off every year. We have religious holidays instead of non-religious holidays like you have in the U.S. So that's one beneficial point. Obviously, the North Germans sort of look down at the very successful South with a little bit of mixed feelings. They think we're bucolic. They think we are probably having too much fun, too Catholic, too conservative. Whereas when you look at Berlin, it has a very mixed reputation, looking at it from the southern states as sort of free and easy, happy-go-lucky, but economically not very successful place for hipsters to drink their latte macchiatos.
Yeah. Journalist Stefan Wagner straddles two cultures between the United States and Germany, being married to an American. He's been stationed in the U.S. as a foreign correspondent for German publications. And lately, he's back in Munich, explaining America to readers of German periodicals and websites. Stefan joined us recently in our Travel with Rick Steves studios near Seattle to share his journalist's perspective on our two countries and to look at some of the curious things that make us a bit different from one another. You know, when I'm thinking about traveling to Germany, I'm just always thinking there's some sites that are overrated that everybody has to see and some sites that are underrated. You know Germany quite well. You know where a lot of Americans are inclined to go. What would you say are the underrated aspects of Germany? Because we all want to go to Munich. We all want to go to Mad King Ludwig's castle. We all want to sail the Rhine River and see the castles. That's sort of a, well, I'll see you in Rothenburg, you know. But what are we missing?
I think you have to do what you're doing already, but you have to come back to look at the sort of second cities. You have to look at the places that are more interesting, where you get a more interesting insight into people's lives. It's like going to Rome and not going to the Colosseum. Of course, you're going to go to the Hofbräuhaus or King Ludwig Castle in southern Germany. But I highly suggest that you just go to smaller towns, check it out, go to where people live and talk to real people.
Now, when we talk to real people, we're also going to see a society that is organized in a way that we can be inspired by. And when I think about Germany, I think of alternatives to persistent social problems that we could learn from. When we think about the opioid crisis, I mean, we lose about 80,000 people a year to opioid overdoses. I think you lose, 2,000 a year. That's quite a striking difference. How do you see the difference in gun violence, in drug abuse, in, you know, stability issues, I mean, affordable housing and so on?
I think there is a very different outlook on life. Of course, nobody loves to pay taxes, but I think there's a lot of people who don't mind paying taxes as compared to the U.S. I mean, we get stuff from taxes. We get defense, we get roads, we get schools, we get fire brigades, we get police and everything else. So in a way, your taxes are an investment in your own life and not you're giving it away to some anonymous force that spends it at leisure. I think that's a hugely different outlook, and that's the one that shapes people's minds.
So there's a trust in institutions that maybe you have more than we do.
There is trust, but it's quickly fading, unfortunately. Unfortunately, that's my opinion. But this trust is fading, and it's the same in a lot of Western societies, that there is an increase in autocratic ideas, increase in non-democratic ideas, and a move away from the belief that the state, the government, wants your very best.
Stefan, it's so interesting that both of our societies are dealing with the same challenges. We're dealing with climate change. We're dealing with immigrants. What are the big issues today that a traveler might encounter and that we could learn from on how Germany is dealing with these same challenges that we're dealing with?
It's interesting to look at our 2021 elections. There were some surveys on what are the biggest topics that people care about and want to have changed or tackled. It was immigration, obviously, and climate change. I think if you ask that same question over here, there would be more cultural topics like diversity, gender politics, gun violence, abortion, but none of these topics really matter in Germany.
That's interesting. So we would have these, what it's called, culture war issues, right? And these are issues, but they're not in the front of the German voter's mind at this point.
Not at all.
So climate change is a big deal.
Climate change is probably one of the top two topics for any election these days. And if you look at the fact that about 58% of the power generation just last month was by regenerative power, it's probably a big indicator on where we're going. We're the only nation that actually abandoned atomic nuclear power. So lots of things are happening. A lot of people are unhappy with it. But the overruling majority really supports this. And guns are not, nobody even talks about it or abortion.
Well, how many people do you think you lose in your country a year to gun violence?
I'd have to guess a few hundred.
A couple hundred. We lose tens of thousands of people, depending on how you measure it, to guns. I was just reading there's 1 million people in Germany who own a gun. Most of them are for hunting. Out of 83 million people, that would be like 3 million of our society. That's just a tiny fraction. And it's not even an issue for you. The issue for you is how we're going to survive climate change.
and you're experiencing disasters all over Europe. You experience disasters in Germany. You experience them in California. It's hard to keep your eyes and ears closed and not notice it and perceive and think about what is this going to be like in 20 or 50 years.
Do you see a change in Germany? Because in a lot of ways, Germany follows America 5 or 10 years later. Are you concerned that you might be in for what we're dealing with right now down the road?
I think we definitely see the tendency for polarization, the big sort, sort of. It's obvious it's happening, and it's not going in a very pretty direction. So I think it's a very good idea to think about this 5 to 10 year delay.
Germans are so smart. I would think you would be dealing with this now before it becomes a problem that's out of hand. What are people doing to keep society together instead of having society divide? Is there any, after COVID, for example, do you get a sense that people are less together?
I think people are less together. I also think there are initiatives to see that we need to get together more. Like in southern Bavaria, there's this small initiative called Zamhocken. It means in restaurants and bars, you have one table designated where you can just share the table, sit down and strike up a conversation. And these are designated tables for sitting together and talking to each other.
This is actually a thing that restaurants are making, one table that's communal, recognizing that Germany has a little bit of a struggle to be together like they were before COVID, now that they're out of COVID.
That's a thing. And it's a good thing because we've all sort of lost the art of talking to each other.
I saw a couple of restaurants in my research work in Nordic Europe, and they had the same thing. A restaurant was generally booked up solid, but they had a big dominant table in the restaurant that they didn't take reservations for. And it was designed for people just to come ad lib and be together. And I didn't realize that there was a political motive on that, that we need to talk to each other. I was just in Oslo. And there's a bench that is bent upwards in front of the Nobel Peace Prize Center. And this bench, you cannot sit on this bench without coming together in the middle because of this curve in the bench. And the whole initiative was, we've got to get together. We're all in this together. We need to talk. And that's a beautiful thing about travel, isn't it?
It is. And talking about that bench, I mean, it can be uncomfortable to slide together in the middle, but I think it's always beneficial.
Stefan Wagner, thank you so much for joining us, and best wishes with your work as a journalist, helping Americans and Germans better understand each other.
Thank you so much, Rick.
We have a link to Stefan Wagner's interview with me in English for the publication called This is Germany, as well as a prior visit with us on the show. You'll find it in this week's program notes at ricksteves.com/radio. Our next stop is London, as we hear how to encounter the city's past as it emerges bit by bit from the muddy banks of the River Thames. It's Travel with Rick Steves.